Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in, latest Behind the Bets podcast. I'm Doug Kazarian. Fun show coming up here on Wednesday, October 24th. John Murray of the Superbook will join us, as will Phil Steele. Phil, red hot, 4-1 last week. Five more picks coming up. Murray's going to give us some picks from behind the counter. We'll also talk about the three high-profile ranked matchups this coming weekend on the college football card. Also, talk a little World Series and the first week of the NBA. So plenty of storylines. And, of course, Alabama going undefeated in the first half against the spread this season. A lot of fun we're having online at ESPN Chalk and also on SportsCenter and everywhere else. And really good stuff coming up here on the pod. We'll get into all that next.
Stop. Hammer time.
The mating call for Phil Steele as we bring him in because he is red hot. It has been hammer time. 4-1 last week, Phil.
And Doug went 3-0, so still trying to catch up to you, buddy. We're working hard at it.
You know, it was a little stressful. Once Auburn, I went with the Tigers, thanks to your insight as well, here on the podcast a week ago. And I was like, oh boy, one of these Alabama bets are not going to hit. And then I had a giant smile on my face when they were up 21-0. I was like, okay, I think we're going to get there. Got a little hairy, a little bit at the beginning, early second quarter. But my first 3-0 against the spread of the season on SportsCenter.
Just rolling along each week, and 2-1 was great, but 3-0 is even better.
Right, impossible to do better, as they say. Phil, you were doing better, 4-0, and going into the night game, then it was that USC stupid Trojans Clay Helton hot seat that cost you 5-0 Saturday for the podcast.
Yeah, I felt good at 14-0.
Yeah,
you know, getting a touchdown in that game, you had to feel pretty good, but Utah just outplayed USC top to bottom. So it was a game that Utah definitely deserved to win.
You are leading the charge. In fact, one of our loyal listeners had a parlay of all five of your plays, and he was tweeting at us, I believe, and I'm trying to find him as I scroll through my Twitter timeline. But basically he's like, do I hedge? And I was like, you got to hedge. And apparently he did, based on his tweets, that he did hedge, and you did well for him.
That is outstanding. Let's hope we continue to roll on then.
How often do you get that interaction with players and bettors saying that they followed your, and maybe a parlay or whatever?
I think it's on there. I try to stay off the Twitter timeline a lot of times, just to, you know, but when I do look, yeah, there's quite a bit of it.
All right, so it's C Money. He said he had a five-team parlay, that would have paid over 10 grand.
Wow. That would have been a nice little payoff there.
I did respond and say to hedge.
Yeah, too bad USC didn't get through for him.
Yeah. All right, my man. Well, good stuff as always. Love the breakdowns. Let's get to your five plays this week. And obviously, you dive deeper. You tweet out pictures from the weekend, just breaking down box scores. And this is a team you've been riding the last couple of weeks on the podcast, North Carolina. Why do you like the Tar Heels?
Well, I'll tell you, Doug, if Larry Fedora had any kind of luck at all, it's definitely bad luck because they have outplayed Virginia Tech. They outplayed Syracuse, and they keep at the end of the game somehow, some way, coming up short on the scoreboard. I think they missed a late field goal, which would have clinched the Syracuse game. Syracuse comes out, gets a touchdown tie, and then wins it in overtime. The Virginia Tech game, they're up by 2, I believe. They fumble at the goal line going in. The ball bounces high in the air. VT drives the length of the field to beat them. But the underlying fact is that the last 2 weeks, I thought they outplayed both Syracuse and Virginia Tech. The Miami of Florida game, they had 3 defensive touchdowns they gave up. And in the first 3 games, they had a whole bunch of starters suspended, 13 different players suspended the first 3 games. So a lot of people look at North Carolina as a very weak 1-5 team. I have a different opinion of them, and they're playing a good Virginia team. Virginia, I'll be honest with you, Doug, better than I expected this year. The big difference has been Bryce Perkins at quarterback. He's got a 12-7 ratio. He's also run for 459 yards. Their defense is playing well. It's a young defense, but they're holding opponents to 73 yards per game below their season average, and they're coming off a couple of upset wins in a row. They were an underdog against both Miami and Duke, pulled out the wins there. But now they're back at home in the rare role of favorite. They've been pretty much a dog in most of their games this year. And I just think this North Carolina team is just flying under the radar. As long as Larry Fedora can hold this team together after all these close losses that they're suffering, keep this team together. They do only have five losses on the year, so they still have a shot at getting a bowl eligibility. You look at the rest of the schedule, it is manageable. They play, if they can pick up this Virginia win, they've got Georgia Tech at home, at Duke, Western Carolina, NC State. So as long as he keeps them together, I think we have a very underrated North Carolina team. And they're getting almost a full 10 points here. They're getting 9.5.
No, you've been riding this this Tar Heels train, and we talked about it last couple of weeks. When you get – you only lose once betting into a streak, so continue with this UNC because you've been they've been rewarding you since the beginning, or since you've been on the pod. Let's keep it in the ACC. And a team I'm surprised you're backing because many wrote them off as quitting, so to speak. Louisville laying 2.5 against Wake Forest. Why do you like the Cardinals?
Well, you know, when I look at Louisville, they're a team that opened up the year very unimpressively. I mean, they barely got past Western Kentucky. They got blown out by Virginia. But then they played a good game against Florida State. In the Florida State game, they actually, it was at home, and they had the lead, and then they throw a pass late. Had they not thrown the pass, had they run the ball, they probably beat Florida State at home. The next week they played Georgia Tech and the option on the road, and they rarely faced the option. They just got crushed. And then Boston College is just, I think Boston College is one of the more underrated teams in the country. They've got the solid run game, good defense, good special teams across the board. I like BC this year, and they went lost at BC. But now they're back at home. They have five losses, and this is off a bye, and it is a circle the wagons game. They have to turn their season around. And their opponent this week is Wake Forest. Now, here's an interesting thing about Wake Forest last week when they played Florida State. They were down to one scholarship linebacker. That's how banged up they are at the linebacking core. And what happened? Florida State had their best offensive performance of the season, gained 141 yards above their season average, 485 yards against Wake Forest. And the Wake Forest linebacking core not getting any healthier this week. They have to travel a second straight week. Quarterback Sam Hartman has just a 12-7 ratio this year, hitting 53%. So they're struggling a little bit at the QB position. Normally a strong running team. They only ran the ball for 1.9 yards per carry. And I just think the situation favors Louisville. It's an absolute must win. And I don't think Bobby Petrino's forgot how to coach. I know that he's having a rough year so far this year, but I think they turn it around, and the spread is unbelievably low. It's under a field goal, so Louisville just has to win this game. I'm going to take Louisville minus the 2.5 in this one.
All right. I like it. I was watching that game as well with Louisville and Florida State, and they completely botched the end of it. I was stunned to see them throwing the ball, but it happens.
Yeah, amazing that they threw the ball late in the game like that.
So let's talk. Let's talk about another relatively short number. This is Western Kentucky and Florida International. A little off the beaten path, but all tickets pay the same, as you very well know. Why do you like the dog here?
This is one of these misleading games for me, Doug. First of all, you go back to last year's game when these two played, and Florida International won 41-17. But if you watch the game, Western Kentucky had a 23-18 first down edge. They out-yarded them and lost the game. Then when I was going through Western Kentucky season, what I do every Monday and Tuesday is I go through and replay each game on the season. As I went through Western Kentucky all year, I'm like, good game, good game, good game. They're 1-6, believe it or not. But they played Wisconsin tough. Maine, they jumped out to a 21-0 lead and then sort of let up against Maine, which is a good FCS team. They probably should have beaten Louisville on the road. They did beat a good Ball State team on the road. They almost upset Marshall at home. Marshall needed a late score to beat them. They had one bad game. That was Charlotte, and that was 40-14. And you can write off a bad game once in a while. And then they played Old Dominion. And last week, they probably should have beaten Old Dominion. You've seen the highlights, what happened at the end of the game, another tough loss for Western Kentucky. But Davis Shanley's starting to throw the ball much better the last couple of weeks, 257 yards last week. And, you know, this is a team that's actually running the football much better than last year. still not great, but they averaged 4.6 yards per carry last week, which is, I mean, last year they couldn't get to 200 yards rushing almost the entire season, it seemed, and this year they had 200 yards rushing. So I'm saying West Kentucky better than its 1-6 record. Then you go through Florida International. They, you know, they covered against Indiana, but Indiana was at their 1 yard line at the end of the game. Old Dominion, they were down at the half. Then a big rainstorm came in, crowd left, and they rallied to win the game. UMass was a very good win. They beat a good UMass team at home, but UMass didn't have their starting quarterback. The Miami of Florida game looks good. They only lost 31-17, but it was actually 31-0 or 31-3. Miami got stopped on fourth and goal at the one, and then Florida International got a couple of late scores. They beat Arkansas Pine Bluff, big deal. The Middle Tennessee game, they took advantage of a Middle Tennessee team coming off two tough games in a row, two big wins, two of the biggest wins in Conference USA, and Stockstill went out in the second quarter, and then they beat Rice last week. So I'm still not seeing a great game for Florida International, and despite their 6-1 or 5-2 record, and I think West Kentucky's completely under the radar, backs of the wall game at home, and they're getting 3.5 points here at home. I like West Kentucky in a surprising upset.
Lengthy discussion on Western Kentucky. You don't get that very often. but, hey, you know, it's very
important.
I
do watch all the games, Doug.
I know you do. I see you tweet out your setup. How many TVs do you have?
12. And then sometimes I have to watch one on the computer at the same time. It's rather, it goes through a lot of Diet Mountain Dews during the course of a Saturday.
Yeah. I have a 5 TV setup. I need to post a picture on social media. I haven't done it. I'm putting the finishing touches on it on the Man Cave this
week.
I will
retweet it when you do.
Yeah, 5
so
big
sure
TVs.
Include me in your tweet.
Yeah, 5 big TVs. I have a, what is it, a 65-incher in the middle and a 50
nice.
Inches on the all around. But you went volume, which I applaud as well.
Now, my home office has got the 5 big TVs.
Okay. Okay.
And then, like, 2 little ones. So I only have the 7 at home, but I've been just
7.
Staying at work.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been staying at work till 11, so I pretty much catch all the games here.
All right. Interesting handicap here, given Oregon's beatdown they had at the Palouse. And you like the Ducks to bounce up off the mat like they did earlier this year once they blew that game to Stanford. They had an impressive bounce back against Cal on the road. You like them to do the same here in Tucson.
Yeah, I do. And, you know, last week was just a textbook situational handicapping. Oregon at home against Washington, fired up, pulls the upset, 30-27, loud crowd, and then they have to go on the road and travel. And Washington State's off a bye, game days on hand, and they are fired up to the A++ level and led 27-0 at the half. Now, I like the way Oregon bounced back. In fact, they got within 7. And if you're watching the game, Washington State threw a ball up, and there was 2 defenders there. It looked like Oregon was going to get the interception. And then the Washington State receiver just pulled it away from them, and then they got the tacked-on touchdown at the end with 3 minutes to go to win. But had they pulled in that interception, Oregon might have been able to even come back in that game. So I'm impressed. I've been impressed with Oregon all season long. Now you look at Arizona, they're a team that's really struggled. And you talked about Cal. They went on the road after losing to Stanford and beat Cal 42-24. You know, Arizona beat Cal, but if you watch that game, it was all due to turnovers. I mean, Cal had a 476-265-yard edge on Arizona, 25-13 first-down edge. If not for turnovers, Arizona loses that game. They somehow beat Cal by 7. To me, Arizona is a very weak team at this point. Defensively, large edge to Oregon. They're holding their opponents below their season average. Arizona's allowing their foes 33 yards above their season average. Oregon's about 73 yards per game better. They allow 3.2 yards rushing. So you know the edge is there on defense. And how about the edge at quarterback? Justin Herbert, probably the number one quarterback for the draft. Now,
if he comes out.
Didn't have a tremendous game against Washington State, but a good enough game. And then you look at Arizona's quarterback situation. Khalil Tate, very questionable coming in. We've seen him play this year on that hobbled ankle. He's not anywhere near Khalil Tate. Even if he plays, he won't be 100%. Or it's Rhett Rodriguez, who last week hit 15 of 34 passing. So much better pass game, better defense, off a loss. And the environment at Arizona is not going to be quite the environment they were facing there in Pullman, Washington last week. So I think Oregon overall, just simply the better team, laying 9.5 off a loss. I'm taking the Ducks here.
Did you watch the Arizona-UCLA ending last week?
Arizona at the end of the game. Refresh my memory on that one.
So Rodriguez, I mean, Arizona had the game. They were down 4 with like 7 minutes to go driving. They get into red zone, third and five. You're down four with about four and a half to go. And they're running all over UCLA. And Rodriguez is shaky, for the most part, at quarterback. They throw, roll out, throw incomplete, and then they kick a field goal to go down one. It was idiotic. You run twice. You cannot kick a field goal down four with four and a half minutes to go when you have a bad defense.
That's true.
And they never got the ball back.
Had the thought process been there of going for it, they probably would have ran the ball on third and five to get it closer to the sticks.
They were gashing them, Bill.
And yeah. Taylor was running wild for the most part in that game.
It was mind-boggling. So, and Sumlin blew it. They never got the ball back because their own defense stinks. And so not only are they gashing UCLA, they can't rely on their defense. It was a shootout. It was in the, I think, 60s, the combined points. So just really disappointing to see that mismanagement at the end. So that helps your Oregon bet. So one final game here. You know, we thought K-State, we thought the Bill Snyder underdog magic was done after they did not cover as a big dog to West Virginia. But here he is, bounces back with three straight covers as a dog, and you like the Wildcats again this weekend.
Yeah, and actually there's numerous reasons to like Kansas State. Now, first of all, you play this game on paper, Doug. Oklahoma's going to win the thing by four touchdowns or more. I mean, on paper, this Kansas State team that went into West Virginia lost 35-6, gave up 464 yards. You wonder how they can stop Oklahoma's offense. And on the flip side of the coin, K-State's offense hasn't been doing that great, although they picked it up as of late. They had 34 against Baylor and 31 against Oklahoma State. But here's the three main reasons that I like Kansas State in this one. The first reason is what you touched on. Bill Snyder is an underdog. Amazing. 23-7 as an away dog. And a lot of those he's won outright. So that's point number one. The second point to make, how about Bill Snyder off a bye? Now, you figure a great coach like Bill Snyder is going to be good off a bye. How about 11-1 against the spread whenever he's had extra time? And the only time he lost, he was like a double-digit favorite against Baylor last year. They led 20-3 at the half. They only won 33-20, laying 15, so he didn't cover by 2.5 points. But he always has his team ready off a bye. Then I'm going to take you back to the Army game. Now, Army is a team that runs the option. K-State doesn't run the triple option like Army does, but runs the option. Very similar type of offense. Ground, pound, move the ball, move the sticks, keep the other team off the field. Second half of that Army-Oklahoma game, Oklahoma had three offensive possessions in the second half. You got to think that's what K-State's going to come in here wanting to do. And if they're running the football like that, clock's going to be running, they're going to shrink the game, and they're getting 25 in this one. So you're getting 25 points with a great underdog coach who's off a bye, which is a great situation. And I think they match up well, just like Army did. I like K-State plus the big points here.
And something I've noticed this year is K-State has made excellent adjustments at halftime. They're one of the better second-half bets we have seen. So something to keep in the back of your mind if you're out there and maybe they're down big. You can even press, I would say, or double up, I guess is a better way to put it. So, Phil, awesome analysis. What about the higher-profile games like Georgia and Florida? Where do you stand on that one?
I like the Gators, and you know, the surprising thing for me, Doug, go back to that Georgia-Missouri game towards the end of September. I had Georgia. I was laying 14, and I thought they would come out and dominate the line of scrimmage. I had them as better on the offensive line, better on the defensive line. Watching the game closely, I mean, if Georgia needed to pick up 3rd-and-1 or 4th-and-1, they didn't get it. If Missouri needed to pick up 3rd-and-2 or 3rd-and-3, they got it every damn time. I'm like, I can't believe it. Missouri's outplaying Georgia's line of scrimmage. Now, Georgia got to a 14-point win as they blocked a punt, had a couple turnovers. I'm very fortunate.
Yeah, the defense got it
that
there.
One. What's that?
The defense got it there. I believe there was a strip of a wide receiver that was returned.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it was a very fortunate push/loss because I think there were some 14.5s out there. And I came away thinking, wow, a little bit about Georgia. Then I went to the LSU game with that same thought process. I'm like, you know, LSU is outstanding at the line of scrimmage. I don't know if Georgia matches up well. And guess what? LSU outrushed them 275-133. Just dominate them at the line of scrimmage. Now, you wonder, is Florida any good at the line of scrimmage. Well, they took on that same LSU team. Now, granted, it was in the swamp, and Georgia had to play them in Death Valley. But by the same token, they outrushed LSU. They had a 215 to 180-yard edge. They ran the ball for 5 yards a carry and held LSU to 4.4. So Florida, at the start of the year, remember when they lost to Kentucky? I think they were missing two or three guys from the defensive front seven, one with injury, one with suspension. They got those guys back. They've been playing much better in the defensive front seven since then. Offensively, they just get better each week under Dan Mullen, and they're running the football better. Felipe Franks has proven to be a decent quarterback. I mean, he's got a 15-5 ratio this year. It's a 50-50 split, and you think, well, Georgia always beats Florida, right, because they killed them last year. Actually, Florida had won the previous three meetings. So I think that this is a Florida team that can hold with Georgia at the line of scrimmage, has the skilled players. They've got a lot. They're probably the fastest defense in the SEC is Florida. And I think Florida can potentially win the game. So I'm definitely taking the 7 points in that one.
Total seems a little high. 52.
What is the total on that one,
52?
Doug?
52.
Yeah, I would probably, let me see where my score, I'm coming in 24-23. So, yeah, I like the under in that one then.
Iowa-Penn State has the same total. That seems low. I like over in that game. And what do you make of that game? Penn State, two losses already. Obviously, Iowa is the team that's flying a little bit below the radar in the Big Ten.
Yeah, and, you know, my power ratings have Iowa close to the top ten. And here's the difference with Iowa. You know, for years, Iowa's a team that plays defense, special teams, runs the football, not a flashy offense. And generally, they're a big favorite. They don't cover because they play such a conservative style. But this year, it's a different Iowa team. They have the defense. They are actually holding opponents to 128 yards below their season average. That's the sixth best mark in the country. You can't run the ball on Iowa. They're allowing 80 yards per game on the ground, 2.7 yards per carry. Now, Wisconsin did get them for 210, and I will say that Penn State did run the ball on Michigan State, which came in with an equally great statistical defense. But I think Iowa's better up front than Michigan State, and so I think Penn State's going to struggle to run the ball here. Now, on the flip side of the coin, Iowa actually has an offense. Nate Stanley's got a 16-6 ratio this year. They're putting up 31 points per game, almost 400 yards per game. And their offense is actually averaging 21 yards more than their opponents allow. Penn State's got a good offense. Penn State's a very good team. They're at home. But I was thinking the line on this. I've got the two teams fairly close in my mind. I was thinking the line might be like 3 or 4. And it's up there towards 7. So I clearly like the underdog Hawkeyes. I think they're one of the surprise stories of the year. And if you looked at their schedule at the start of the year, you had to think they had a shot at the West. And they shipped, you know, the Wisconsin game's an 11-point loss. They were up with a minute to play in the game. I had Wisconsin. Right. They gave up the touchdown late, and then they gave up the long touchdown run. So that was a game they could easily have won at home. I like the Hawkeyes plus the points here.
You know, I've been certainly critical of Iowa and even Michigan State for that matter, and those teams that have reached the Big Ten championship game and just, I thought, just didn't belong on the same field as anyone in the college football playoff. Sparty proved that when they got shut out by Bama. But I think this Iowa team is much better than the ones we saw get smoked against Stanford in the Rose Bowl with Christian McCaffrey and some other Iowa teams. I like this Hawkeyes offense in particular.
Yeah, and that defense is a nasty bunch. They're allowing 258 yards per game this year, which is one of the best in the entire country.
Phil, great analysis as always, great picks the last few weeks. Let's keep it rolling. Both of us, let's keep it rolling.
You got any clues what you're going to be using on SportsCenter on is it Saturday mornings, Doug?
Yeah, it's Saturday mornings around 9:30 a.m. I don't know what I'm going to do with Bam on a bye.
Oh, man.
I got to actually handicap some games. I've been doing side and over every time, so I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm leaning. You know what? I don't know where I'm leaning. I really don't. I think I may be following you on that or at least the thought process. I might be going Clemson in this one.
Clemson?
Yeah, I'm looking there.
Okay. That's one place. You know, the matchup, if you're looking for a matchup game of the week, that's probably it, because Florida State's offensive line has struggled all year. Last week they took advantage of Wake Forest linebackers being out, but that Clemson defensive front's the best in the country. So you take that matchup and you wonder how Florida State's going to score very often with the quarterback running for his life.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just scarred from having taken Miami in that rivalry game, so I'm almost gun-shy for that very reason.
Yeah, Understandable in that case, but yeah, I would lean with Clemson. What else are you looking at? What other possibilities?
That's about it. That's about it. Maybe Utah, but
okay.
UCLA is playing much better.
Like.
But UCLA's
well,
playing
well. You can't
much
use Utah because it's a Friday game, isn't it?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. In the column, I have a column that comes out Friday. I could use. I was looking there for the Friday column. You're right.
Yeah, now that one I like, especially with the fact UCLA took on a very bad Arizona team last week, and as you mentioned, probably should have lost the game. UCLA got gashed on the ground, and if UCLA is going to win the game, they need to move the football on the ground. You don't run the ball in Utah. Utah's got a hell of a defense, and like I said, they dominated USC last week. Now, coming off a big win going on the road is one thing, but it's a Rose Bowl, and so they'll be fired up for this game.
And the key is the quarterback situation. Is Spate playing?
I believe it'll probably be Spate.
That's what I'm thinking.
I'd be more worried if Thompson Robinson was
correct.
Playing.
Correct. That's exactly what I am suggesting. And I also like Syracuse at home catching two. I don't believe in this NC State team.
And I'm in agreement with you there as well. I think that Syracuse can be a dangerous team. As much as they deserve to lose last week against North Carolina, North Carolina's an underrated team, and Syracuse was a big favorite. We've seen them get fired up at home as a dog.
Right.
Remember that Florida State game that they played earlier this year? And NC State played a very soft schedule early on, and I was not buying NC State. Finley's there, yes, but I thought the Marshall game, if you watch that, Marshall stood with them toe-to-toe. It was a 10-point game. Marshall had the ball at the end. They threw an interception return for a touchdown, made it a 17-point game. Boston College came back late on them. I thought NC State dominated the first half, but Dillon didn't play for Boston College, so I think Syracuse is a team that's tough to go against at home, especially as an underdog.
And just the spot of a team, you're thinking big things, you're undefeated, and you just absolutely get smoked.
Bubble burst.
And yeah, your bubble burst. Now you have back-to-back road games. You go to a place you're not really amped to play up in Syracuse, and then then you got a team that's hungry coming off a loss. I think the spot favors Syracuse. I also like Maryland to bounce back against Illinois. Now, it's a high line at 18.5, so that's at least where I'm looking initially with the Terps.
Yeah, and if you go on to my Twitter, I just put up, and this one surprised me. I was typing in, who ranks highest in the country in yards per play on defense? Maryland's number 11.
Their run defense is excellent.
Their overall defense gives up 4.54 yards per play, which is 11th best in the country. I did a double take when I saw Maryland there, and I'm typing in. I'm like, really? And I went and checked the records. I'm like, oh, yeah, they are. And the thing with Maryland, you go back to their the two home games that they've had so far. They came against middle to below average Big Ten teams. They beat Minnesota 42-13. They beat Rutgers 34-7. And then what you just touched on, a great run defense taken on Illinois. We all know Illinois needs to run the football to be successful. And they've been running the ball for the most part of the year. They've had a lot of games over 200 yards rushing. But they were held to 69 yards by Purdue and got beat by 39. A.J. Bush struggled throwing the football last week. They pulled him in the fourth quarter. So I wonder if there's any thought process they can throw the football here. As long as Maryland takes away the run, I don't see Illinois answering. And Maryland can. Once they get rolling, they can roll on you like they did with Minnesota. 42 points, Rutgers 34. So I think that if you're looking at that game, clearly Maryland's the side.
Yeah, that was last week they were shut out, but that was in 25-mile-per-hour winds in Iowa City. And you mentioned the defense of the Hawkeyes.
Against a great run defense
as well. Right. Real quickly.
Oh, and that's the other point on that game I want to make for you, Doug, when I was going through it. If you look at Maryland's wins this year, they ran for 444 against Bowling Green. They ran for 315 against Minnesota. They ran for 290 against Rutgers, okay? Their losses, they ran for 132, 147, and 68. Here's the thing. Maryland wins and wins big when they run the ball. Let's take a look at Illinois' run defense. 222 yards per game, 5.4 yards per carry they're giving up. Like the matchup there.
Yeah, I do too. But those are the games I'm keeping an eye on. I want to back Purdue because I really like them, but the spot is horrible, right? Ohio State there, +1.5 at East Lansing. I think it's just a stay away, but from on paper, I liked it.
Yeah, and that's one where you just have to think back to the Oregon-Washington State game last week. And, they're playing Michigan State on the road off a loss and off a tough loss to Michigan. So if you're ever going to get a bounce-back game from Michigan State, it's this week. And I thought in the post-game press conference or the post-game interview with Brohm, he was like, well, we're going to enjoy this game and we're going to remember it for years. And I'm thinking, well, you know, it sounds like there's going to be a little bit of a letdown factor this week.
Yeah, that's why I'm off it, but that's at least caught my eye initially.
Yeah.
But no Bama. No Bama. That's the unfortunate part. Tied or 8-0 in the first half against the spread.
You got to love that. And are you going to use him in the first half against LSU? You have to.
Well, so that's hard because the reason the first half has value is because Tua plays the entire first half, whereas the game lines factor in garbage time, backdoor covering. So there's more value in the first half line when the spreads are high, because the first half lines are still commensurate with the game line, whereas they're not juiced up high enough. So there's more of an advantage with Bama first half when the spreads are really high. Does that make sense? But when there's
that's why there's more value to betting the first half than there is the game.
Right, because Tua doesn't play the fourth quarter.
Games.
But now the next game is LSU, where Tua is expected to play the entire game. It's a more equitable opponent, if you will, and therefore it's almost better just to bet Bama game because you get four quarter instead of two, because you're getting Tua for four, so might as well just increase your chances of a sample size, if you will. So actually, I think there's value in the game line.
Yeah, I would agree. You got an early number on that? Was it 13?
It's in the 13-14 neighborhood, right?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
That's why I believe Caesars had that.
I think I saw I saw a 13 on it last week.
Yeah, I think you have
which
to.
Which is reasonable.
It. I think
it's
you
reasonable
have to lay
if you
it,
bet
though.
Bama.
Yeah, I know they haven't played anyone, but this team's overwhelming.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense.
All right, my man. Good stuff as always. Let's stay hot here.
All right, sounds good, Doug. Good luck to you on your Sports Center picks this Saturday.
All right, will do, bud. Take care.
All right, thanks.
All right, thanks to Phil Steele joining us. Straight ahead, John Murray from the Westgate will break down college football as well and also discuss World Series and the first week and change of the NBA season.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
He almost needs no introduction, but I'm not going to stop running that open because it just needs to be done.
Yeah, I don't think I'm quite in that neighborhood yet where I don't need an intro, Doug. I'm not sure about that. Still need to be announced when I get on the show.
So last podcast, you mentioned that you were going to play golf in your off day. I was kind of calling BS on it. Were you able to play golf?
Really? Yeah, I got out there on Monday.
Oh, good.
Let's call it an up and down round,
yeah.
And we'll leave it at that. I birdied the 17th. That's the signature hole of that course. But the other 17 holes were not as good, let's say.
Is that where I lived? I lived on the 17th fairway?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think you did. Yeah, you did, I think. The 17th, the one where the big pond, and it looks back at the Westgate, that one?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's probably the signature hole. Now, I should note that's a par 3. I could never birdie anything other than a par 3, Doug.
Really? Really? All right, we got to work on that game of yours.
It was a struggle out there. That's a pretty tough course, man. It's not an easy golf course.
Well, I only doubted you because I just felt like the busiest time of year thing. It was like the work demands.
The only day off I had this week. I actually had to come in here for a meeting on Monday morning, but I was able to fit in a round in the afternoon.
Did you leave the
tape
recorder?
No, it's really busy right now. You've got, yeah, of course. You've got left the room. It's really busy, man. We got the World Series started last night. NBA's underway. The Golden Knights are on a homestand right now. They're in town for the next week or so. And then, obviously, you got college and pro football. So there's just a million things going on. I think this is one of the best times of year, though, because the weather here in Vegas is awesome, and there's just a lot to bet on and a lot to watch.
Well, I want to talk about all that, the NBA and the World Series coming up. But let's talk college football. And I was torn, and I imagine a lot of our loyal listeners were, because you gave out some incredibly sharp plays. I believe went 5-1, but obviously they moved the market. So the question is, what do you do if you know the sharp plays Purdue plus 14, the line's at 13 and 12.5, things like that?
Yeah, I mean, you got to be careful with that too. And then later in this show, I'll give out what I've seen so far this week. But I can tell you right now, some of these numbers have moved a lot, especially one game that we'll get into. The sharp play came in at a number that is long gone. So, you know, you really got to be careful. You don't want to lay a number that's a lot more than the guy you're following. Like, if the only reason you're betting on the side is because you're following somebody and you can't get his number, you should really think twice about that. Now, if you still liked Purdue at plus 13, which obviously, hopefully you did, because they won the game easily outright, then you should play it. But don't just go chasing a wise guy's bet when you can't get the number he got.
Well, that's the key. Because you don't, at least in my opinion, you don't want to blindly follow anyone. But I think there is just sort of a data point concept where if I like a side and the sharps are on, you know, like Purdue. I liked it. I talked to a bunch of people. I know Matt Eumanns of VSiN was just pushing Purdue hard and thought they had a really good chance to win it outright. And then you see the line move and you liked it yourself. I mean, for me, that's enough to go on, so to speak. And then obviously, what number do you take? I mean, look, 13 and 14, not huge difference in college, but, you know, once you start getting down to those threes and off the three, that's a big deal.
Did Matt Eumanns go to Purdue, Doug?
Right. Yes, he did.
I think he did. No, it was a very good call, though. And Matt actually, you know, I listened to him on the radio last week. He picked them to win the game outright early in the week. It was a terrific call. They won that game pretty easily, really.
And I will say, I don't know if I know an alum who was more willing to fade his school than Matt is with Purdue. So it was surprising to see him on the Boilermakers, because over the years, he has certainly faded them. So, you know, it was a crazy weekend. I mean, what do you do with the power ratings of Ohio State, seeing how bad they were there and knowing that they have had, obviously, a season full of hoopla, to put it gently? So, I mean, what's the power rating done with the Buckeyes?
I don't think you want to overreact too much to any one game, but certainly if you ever were going to overreact to one game, it would have been that game on Saturday where they just got manhandled by the Boilermakers. We talked about this a few weeks ago. They were lucky to beat Penn State in that game. They probably would have lost that game if it wasn't for James Franklin with some very questionable coaching decisions. But you don't want to overreact too much to one game. And I still think Ohio State, as bad as they looked on Saturday night, they can still get into the college football playoff. They're going to need to beat Michigan, but that game is in Columbus, and they're going to need to win the Big Ten championship game, obviously, but they'll be a big favorite in that game. The Buckeyes are still a team that could get back into the college football playoff, Doug.
I mean, that's what we need to remember, is we've seen all these paths to the playoff where, you know, it's much different than the BCS era. Like, that needs to be kind of reminded still. Year 5, I believe it is, of the playoff, and the fact that, you know, we can't overreact too much to one loss. One loss teams are getting in the playoff, and they don't have to be the best team to get to the playoff. They just have to be the fourth best team. And that's certainly possible with Ohio State.
I think the year Ohio State did win the championship was the first year of the playoff, and I think they were blown out by Virginia Tech in Columbus, if I remember that game
September,
correctly.
September, though. But
and then... Yeah, true. It was much earlier in the season. But my point is, you can overcome one really bad performance. And hopefully for the Buckeyes fans, that's the only time they're going to look that bad again this season. But I still think they've got the path in front of them. And it's going to include needing to beat Michigan in that big game on November 24th. That'll be an awesome game. That game really may decide one of the four playoff teams.
And it involves your Michigan Wolverines. How do you feel about that?
Yeah,
that defense.
Oh, I love
that really
Coach Harbaugh.
Championship material defense.
Their defense is absolutely outstanding. I mean, if they can beat Ohio State, they got to play Penn State too. But if they can win those two games and win the Big Ten championship game, I definitely think that the Wolverines will find a spot in the college football playoff this year. And I think it'd be interesting to see them line up against Alabama. That Alabama offense against Coach Harbaugh's defense. I think that'd be a fun game.
Well, I don't think it's I think it goes without saying that if Michigan wins out, they're in the playoff.
Yeah. Like, no, they'll get in.
There's no way they're not, right? I mean, even if Notre Dame, which is their one loss, like completely unravels and that loss looks even worse, I guess. Like, I think they have to be in, right?
Well, I think if Notre Dame keeps winning, that's good for Michigan. Certainly, if Notre Dame were to go undefeated, Michigan could point to that one loss and say, look, we lost a college football playoff team on the road in week one. I mean, that's about as good of a loss as you could ever have in college football.
Right. So it would be Notre Dame, Clemson, Bama, and that fourth team would all be one-loss teams. I think it has to be Michigan. Unless
I think so, too. Now, the Big 12, we are leaving out the Big 12. And we talked about this, I think, on last week's show. The Big 12, it's just very hard to get to the college football playoff the way that conference is set up. With the nine conference games and then playing the second-best team in the conference title game, it's a very difficult path to the college football playoff out of the Big 12.
Well, no doubt it's difficult, but let's say there is a one-loss champ, whether it be Texas or Oklahoma, and they are a conference champ. What does the committee do? And I say that with an eye on the futures market. I mean, obviously this is not a college football playoff podcast. Well, we're discussing the futures. Like, where's the value here?
That'd be tough. I mean, I think it'd be a very tough call. Let's just pretend Oklahoma wins out. That would include a win in Morgantown on the Friday night after Thanksgiving. That would include a win in the Big 12 championship game, let's just say, against Texas, so they'd avenge their one loss. And then you'd have to go up with them up against, let's say, Ohio State for that fourth spot. We're assuming Notre Dame wins out. We're assuming Clemson wins out. So you'd be going between the Big 12 champ and the Big 10 champ for the fourth spot in the college football playoff and a date with Alabama. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure what the committee would do there. It'd be a very tough decision there.
Oklahoma 30-1, Texas 50-1 right now at the Westgate.
I think you need to factor in, too, if you're looking at future value. You know, if one of those teams is the four seed, that would likely mean they would be playing Alabama in the Orange Bowl. So you'd have to think they'd be a very big underdog in that game, obviously.
Yeah, and the combined probability of winning those games, like you said, in Oklahoma's instance at West Virginia, and then also the Big 12 title game against a team where the line might be, what, 3 or 4 with Texas? If Texas is still a one-loss squad at that point.
I think 3.5 or 4. And this all could work out really well for Clemson, theoretically, Doug. Clemson is potentially the 2 seed would play in our scenario that we're talking about, Notre Dame. You know, as good a season as Notre Dame is having, I would much rather play Notre Dame than, let's just say, Ohio State or Oklahoma or Michigan. So Clemson, I really think, is the team that's quietly sitting pretty right now. And I think they're the one team that has the athletes to match up with Alabama and potentially give Alabama a game.
Yeah, especially the defensive line. Now, a couple things I want to talk about you just alluded to. Let's first talk about Alabama because I'm in withdrawal this week. I don't get to bet them first half.
Yeah, we're happy about that. We're finally not going to lose on the Alabama first half. So that'll be – actually, you know what's funny? We didn't do poorly this week. We had one of our house players took Tennessee, I want to say +20.5 right before kickoff. And I think Alabama scored a touchdown on like the third play of the game. So
no, Alabama took a while to score. I tweeted like it took 4 minutes and I was joking.
Oh,
like,
4 minutes to score.
What's taking Alabama so long? And, of course, one guy was like, he's like, what do you mean they scored, you know?
Yeah, a little sarcasm there, huh? Well, they intercepted a pass on an ensuing Clemson drive, though, and they scored again, right?
Correct. It was like a fumble interception that Tennessee had backed up. Tennessee actually played a lot better once they went to the backup quarterback, but that's neither here nor there. I texted Ed this. I thought maybe it's a little prisoner of the moment, but the first half total of 32 was the worst line I've seen all season.
You didn't care for that number? Why is that?
Well, Bama hasn't scored less themselves, scored less than – they've only scored less than 31 one time this year, and that was in the opener when Jalen Hurts had a predetermined amount of series, right? They scored – and then after that, they've been just lighting it up. So how can you have both teams over-under in the first half of 32?
I think that guy that took the 20.5 also took the over, if I remember that sequence correctly. So I guess he just juiced out on that Alabama first half.
Maybe it was a Tua injury, that kind of thing?
For us to win anything in an Alabama first half is a positive here at the Superbook. We'll take it.
Well, you know, it's funny because we talk about the first half being commensurate with the game line. Ed says he just opened 20 when everyone else was at 18. I mean, middlers and arbitragers, obviously, that's a gold mine opportunity. I just don't think you guys have adjusted enough. Now, it'll be really interesting to see what happens with LSU a week from Saturday, because it's not one of these, you know, I don't want to say cupcake, but these overmatched opponents where you have these huge lines. It's going to be, the game line's going to be around 2 touchdowns, so what do you do with the first half? I think it has to be more normal, because in this case, the game line of 14 factors in a full game of Tua.
Well, you know, LSU's played the hardest schedule in the country so far, and they've come out with just the one loss. They're very impressive, and I see people lining up to bet against them every week, including myself in a lot of these situations. I did pass last week, but they manhandled Mississippi State on Saturday night. That was a side that a lot of sharp guys were taking. They were taking the Bulldogs. And, man, LSU, they're pretty good, man. And you got to consider the one knock on Alabama. They have played a very easy schedule this year, Doug.
Oh,
they
completely.
Really haven't played anybody yet. And this is going to be their first real test. Could be the first time they face any adversity. I think LSU has the athletes to give Alabama a game, but I'm not going to go out and pick anybody against Alabama right now.
Well, that's the difference with this year's Alabama team, because they have such an explosive offense. So now, and I made the parallel, Alabama's like the New Orleans Saints in a way. If you want to talk about Southern teams, you have a team that's loaded on offense, high-powered offense, and you just need the D to come up with a handful of stops.
Yeah, and I think the D will be able to get a handful of stops against Joe Burrow.
Right. So that's the whole
sure
point. It's
that.
Such a phenomenal. It's just fascinating because it's such a different Alabama team.
Yeah, we've never seen Alabama with an explosive quarterback that they can rely on. We've never seen an Alabama team that can get behind. Not that they have this season, but they have the ability to fall behind, and they know that Tua can rally them from behind. Whereas in the past, if they got behind, they didn't really have a quarterback that could stretch the field and lead these long drives to come back. They really needed to play from ahead in the past, and they don't need to do that anymore.
Well, I'm just excited to bet on Alabama again because, yes, there are unknowns, but I'll take my chances, right? Like, if you have to bet the game, I'll take my chances with a team that has looked amazing, albeit against weak competition, because you trust Saban, you trust everything, especially with a week to prepare.
I hope you don't go through any withdrawals this weekend. I'm going to check on you on Saturday. Make sure you're doing okay.
Pretty sure we'll find some action.
Alabama to pump into your bloodstream on Saturday. There's a lot of other games this week. I think you'll be okay.
Well, the other team I wanted to talk about that you mentioned is Clemson. And you and I communicated Saturday afternoon, and I got the bat signal from you. And I wish we got it earlier than week on the podcast, but sometimes the information doesn't present itself. But you had the old Clemson reverse line movement to the favorite.
Well, it was definitely one of those cases, like we talked about Michigan-Wisconsin the week before, where the public was lining up to take the dog. They were on NC State, and a number of sharper players were on Clemson, and the line was actually moving against the money. I had a feeling that Clemson was probably going to win the game pretty easily. I may or may not have alerted a few pals of mine to that fact. And the book here, we did quite well in that game.
Bear had a great tweet. I guess since 1994, there were 8 situations where an undefeated team of 5-0 or better was at least a 2-touchdown underdog. So one of those kind of fake undefeated teams.
Yeah.
And the favorite won covered all 8 times. So, like, there's a reason that line was that big. And you get maximum effort from the other good team, right? Like, they've got the undefeated team coming in, blah, blah, blah. And then Clemson was ready from the start.
That line was a little cheap. I mean, what do you think Alabama would have been in that spot against NC State? I mean, they would have been at least like a 30-point favorite.
Think so?
So, just looking at the Alabama lines in their own games, yeah, I think they would have been about a 30-point favorite. And again, I don't think Clemson is that much worse than Alabama. I know that sounds ridiculous, but Alabama hasn't played anybody, and Clemson's got a lot of athletes of their own. So I don't think it's quite as big of a gap between those two schools as most people probably think that it is.
And when they play, Trevor Lawrence is going to have a lot more practice and game experience, which is awesome.
Yeah, he'll have a whole month, presumably, to practice for that game after the regular season's over, after the ACC championship game is over. And it's going to give Clemson a much better chance this season. Having a quarterback that can move the ball down the field the way they had with Deshaun Watson Kelly Bryant just had no chance in that semifinal game last year, Doug. I'm sure you remember that. And I think Dabo Swinney made the right move by going to Lawrence, and I think he did it with an eye towards a game with Alabama, probably in the national championship game. I don't think they would play each other in the semifinal round. Because I think if Clemson were to lose, they'd probably miss out on the college football playoff, especially if Notre Dame goes undefeated. Especially if Notre Dame goes undefeated. Because I don't think a one-loss ACC team would get in over, let's say, a one-loss Big Ten team, because the ACC is so down this year.
Let's talk about the high-profile matchups this weekend. We'll start in the SEC Top 10 Showdown in Jacksonville, Florida, and Georgia. And the Bulldogs, remember we last saw them, you know, really in front of everyone, losing at LSU. Well, now they get 2 weeks off, and they get one of their another rival here with the Gators.
Yeah, and I had said earlier in the year I thought Georgia was the second-best team in the country behind Alabama, ahead of Clemson. That pick doesn't look too good after what happened in the Georgia-LSU game. Right now we've got this number at 6.5. Georgia, a 6.5-point favorite in this game. We had some sharp money come in this morning on Florida plus 7. Had a sharp group take that. And that number moved everywhere this morning down to 6.5 across the market. Florida's very good defensively, Doug. They have a very, very good defense. This should be a great game on Saturday.
Total of 52. And I know it's never fun to bet under in any sport these days, particularly football and the NBA, but 52 does feel high.
It definitely doesn't seem like it'd be fun to bet the under in an NBA game right now. Some of these NBA scores are just like eye-popping. Yeah, that does seem a little bit high. You know, Florida is such a good defensive team. They're obviously going to try to keep that Georgia offense on the sidelines as much as possible. Got to think the SEC East title is at stake in this game and a potential date with Alabama in the SEC championship game. Georgia's a team that could still get back to the college football playoff. I think their best chance, in my mind, would be if, let's just say, LSU beat Alabama for them, and then they could play LSU in the conference championship game.
Ooh.
I think if they were to win that game, now that's the most interesting scenario. Let's just say LSU beats Alabama, and then LSU loses to Georgia in the SEC championship game, or LSU beats Georgia, because either way, I think the winner of that game would get in, and Alabama's going to get in unless they lose a second time. So I think that would be the most interesting scenario we could talk about. You're looking at two SEC teams there, and believe me, if Notre Dame wins out, Notre Dame's getting one of those four spots.
They sure are. Another big matchup, or high-profile matchup, I should say, this one in the Big Ten. Iowa just cruising along, 6-1, and this is a different Hawkeyes team. They have a much better offense than we've seen in years past, not this 3 yards in a cloud of dust nonsense we've seen. So Stanley's been kind of impressive, and it's at Happy Valley, and this line has come up. It was Penn State, I believe, 4.5, and now it's 6.5.
Yeah, we didn't get that money here, the Penn State money, I mean. We've been moving with the market on that game. We opened at 5.5 on Monday morning. Right now we're at Penn State minus 6.5, but certainly there was some sharp money that came in on the Nittany Lions from the opener of 4.5 and some other markets. I think this is the best Iowa team we've seen in years, Doug. I mean, they actually have an offense this season. So, yeah, this should be a really good game on Saturday and potentially some potential Big Ten championship game ramifications here. And Iowa could still get into the Big Ten title game for sure.
Total of 52 feels low.
Yeah, that does seem like it should be higher than the Florida-Georgia total.
Right. I was going to say, if you compare it to that other one.
No, I can't disagree with that.
Another ranked matchup, this one in the Pac-12. Washington State off an impressive win. Cougs are 6-1 this year, and that only loss coming at USC on that Friday night where they really could have easily won that game. I'm surprised they lost it, to be honest, even though I was on USC and the Trojans even had a chance to cover. So I've kind of been on both sides of the fence with that comment. But Washington State, I felt, was the better team that game. They just messed up a couple times on D and then didn't ice it at the end of the game, or had a chance to effectively win the game at the end and did not. So they're there on the road at the farm here, Stanford Lane 3.
How good of a coach is Mike Leach? I mean, that guy is just an outstanding football coach.
But he got too cute at the end of the USC game.
Yeah, he did. But isn't that kind of what makes him Mike Leach? I mean, he just...
Oh, I love him.
I think that guy's awesome.
I love him. He's great.
I think that guy, the job he does... to have this Washington State team 6-1, great win on Saturday against Oregon. That was probably the worst game of the week here at the Westgate Superbook in terms of our bottom line. The public came in all over Washington State, and then Washington State just jumped all over the Ducks. Mario Cristobal did not have his team ready to play in that game at all in that first half. I think they were down 27-0 at halftime. So just they weren't ready to go there. But this is a really tough spot for Mike Leach and the Cougars. Such an emotional win. College game day in Pullman for the first time ever. The blowout win. And now they got to go on the road against a good Stanford team. Tough spot for Washington State here.
I'm surprised you guys had the public all over Wazoo there. What do you think that was?
Oh, yeah, they came in late. It was all like late money. They just all of a sudden everybody decided right around 12 that Washington State was a lock, and the money just started pouring in. It was all a Saturday afternoon, I should say.
Do you think it was influenced from earlier in the day with game day? I mean, that's surprising. I would think that Oregon, with being a higher brand, would have generated the handle.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. I don't know if maybe it was the game day thing, but all of a sudden, just we had so many of our house players laying the number with Washington State, and they looked pretty good in the first half. So the players definitely got us on that one.
All right, so last week, I believe, what was it, 5-1 we said with the sharp plays?
Yeah, we gave out there were 6 plays I said that we'd seen some sharp action on. They all won except for Kansas. Got away from the Jayhawks in Lubbock on Saturday. But the other plays were good. Rutgers had a nice cover for us in the morning.
Yeah, there were some ugly dogs. It was Rutgers plus 21 against Northwestern. Kansas, Virginia plus 7.5. We really liked that on the pod a week. That was a nice
one. I liked that one a lot. That was a play that I just personally, I thought that line was way too high. Speaking of great coaches, Bronco Mendenhall is just an outstanding football coach. Done an excellent job with the Cavaliers this year.
Cal, that game we discussed against Oregon State, I probably would have liked Cal more if they were minus 10, not 7. The 7 scared me. I would have rather have laid more points.
Well, the sharper group actually laid 6.5 with Cal, and then that number went up, and Cal won that game pretty easily, so that was definitely a good pick for sure.
All right, so feed us the winners this week.
I'll do my best. I mean, I mentioned we saw some money come in on Florida plus 7 this morning. Here's one, and we can get into what we touched on at the beginning of the show, Doug, with following a guy when you can't get his number. We had a sharper player laid Clemson on Monday. Now, he laid 14 with Clemson. Now, that number is up to 16.5 in most spots. We're at 17 right now. That game is Saturday morning on the road against Florida State.
Yeah, I saw that game earlier in the week. It's noon, Tallahassee. This team, you know, look, I was on Miami in the rivalry game. Kind of a stupid play, but it is what it is. But they did cover against Wake Forest. I was surprised. So they've actually covered back-to-back ACC games. So I think they're now 2-10-1 since the beginning of last season. That's 2-10-1 in 13 ACC games. Give or take, I'm going off memory there, but
yeah,
they may have righted the ship a little bit. The number feels still low, though, because of Clemson's just firepower, you know, potential firepower.
Well, it's going to be tough for Florida State to score. I mean, I'll put it simply. It's just NC State could do nothing against the Clemson defense last week, and I think Florida State's probably going to be in a similar spot. Like I said earlier, Clemson, the one team that has the athletes that match up with Georgia. I mean, they've got, what, 4 NFL defensive linemen right now? Their defense is really, really good. It's just going to be very tough for the Seminoles to move the ball.
Yeah, that O-line is porous for the Seminoles. So Clemson minus 14 is one of the sharp plays you guys have already seen. What else?
Notre Dame. Now, we talked about Notre Dame a little bit on this show. We've seen guys laying the Fighting Irish minus 22.5, minus 23.5. Right now, we've got Notre Dame minus 24. That game is on Saturday night in San Diego, a neutral site game against Navy.
Ooh.
And Notre Dame, they just need to keep staying the course. I'm telling you, if they finish undefeated, they're getting into the college football playoff.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. But that is a big number. And we know things get a little tight this time of year as teams can read the press clippings and taste the college football playoff. I'll never forget your West Virginia Mountaineers over a decade ago 21-point favorites against Pitt, I believe it was. I may or may not have laid the points.
That was my 1 year writing as a ticket writer. I was that was my first year living out here. I was fresh out of college. I was a teller at the was then known as the Hilton, and I had the fun experience of being a teller out on the line as West Virginia gave away their best chance at a national championship. We'll never know, but I think they would have beat Ohio State in that national championship game that year. It actually opened the door. LSU got in as a two-loss team and then beat the Buckeyes for the national championship.
And that was the year Les Miles was supposed to go to Michigan, right? But then his team got to the championship game and he couldn't leave him in that month?
I think that is what happened, yeah. I actually had I had made a future bet on LSU before the season started. I forget what odds I got. They weren't that high. But I had bet the Tigers to win it all, so I had some consolation there. But I would have preferred West Virginia going to a national championship game. And all they needed to do was, I think they were like a 26.5, 27-point favorite against Pitt. In Morgantown, that's one of the all-time. That's really one of the all-time choke jobs in college football history.
Sounds to me like you guys a couple of bookies.
just going back over a decade ago. What?
The wound is still pretty fresh.
Yeah, no, and for me too. How much better of a better are you now than you were that year? Like I just laughed about the just huge chalk I laid in that situation, laughing at myself.
Yeah. Well, you want to learn from your mistakes. I mean, I think I'm much better at college football, but I still couldn't pick an NFL winner to save my life. I wish I had sharp NFL plays to share on the other podcast, and I would just pass them off as my own and package them in the bonanza. But
are you accusing me of something?
This good stuff I see in college football. We don't see anything like that in the NFL, honestly.
No,
I think the plays we've mentioned on the college football podcast, they've done pretty well this season. They're certainly a winner for sure, a good sized winner. But the NFL stuff is just not as good.
All right, let's keep the college picks coming. So Notre Dame minus 22.5, 23.5. What's the next one you've seen?
Got another big favorite for you if you like laying chalk.
Oh, yeah.
How about Fresno State minus 23.5? They're at home against Hawaii. That's a late-night game Saturday, Doug. It's 7:30 local kickoff. Probably be starting at about 10:40 where you are in Connecticut.
Oh, yeah. The old bailout game. Is this one on TV?
The bailout game.
Unlike that Hawaii-Wyoming game was a couple weeks ago?
I'll look for you. It looks like it's on ESPNU.
Ooh, the bailout. Now, Hawaii's backup's playing,
right? That
could be a
bailout
game. Freshman? Quarterback?
Yeah. Hawaii's not the same team without their quarterback. I mean, that's kind of a silly comment, but they're not the same team right now, and they look like they're in for a long night against Fresno, and that's going to be a game. You mentioned the bailout game, the 7:30 kickoff here locally. I'm pretty sure the public is going to come in heavy on Fresno State.
Yep. All right, what else?
The only other one I have for you, and I'm not going to pretend like I know a ton about the game, but I did see a sharp group. They laid 2.5 with Texas State. They are at home against New Mexico. That line's now at 3 in most spots. But that was the last one I've seen so far this week. But, you know, it's still early in the week. It's Wednesday morning here in Las Vegas. I didn't really get that Clemson stuff until later in the week, as you know. There will be other stuff showing up between now and Saturday. I'm pretty confident of that, Doug.
Oh, they like their Texas State Bobcats, those Sharps. I feel like
yeah,
I hear that a lot.
I feel like this isn't the first time that we've... I know. This isn't the first time we've talked about Texas State, is it?
I have a confession to make. I have watched one of their games on an iPad.
Really?
I may have been involved.
Can I ask why?
I may have been involved.
Oh, yeah, a little finance. Well, like, so you weren't just scouting the Texas State
well,
team?
Well, you know, you mentioned Texas State on the podcast. I want to take a look. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, like, there was a reason I was watching. And you can't find it on TV. You have to find it on the pod or the app, the ESPN app. And
I don't think that game is televised here. You know, actually, that brings me to a good point. Sometimes people are shocked when we don't have a game on TV. Like, I think it's important for people to understand we don't have, like, some magical package where we just get every game. We have DirecTV, we have a cable provider, and we have every possible channel. But not every game is on television.
No, that's the problem. And obviously it's a much better situation now here in 2018. But
sure.
you know, like 10 years ago, or back when I was starting out my career in Missouri around 2001, 2002, can you imagine? Not all Mizzou games were televised. Like, in this century, not all the games were televised in, like, Power 5 conferences.
You remember that Oklahoma-Army game? I want to say that was 3 weeks ago.
Right.
I think that game that was a game that went to overtime. That game was on pay-per-view. So we can't show that. I mean, and people were upset, and I don't blame them, but, I mean, we show every game that we have access to. We want to show every single game because the games being on TV drives handle. I mean, believe me, we're not hiding the game from anybody. We want to show you every single game. But there's only so much we can do, and I don't think we're going to get that Texas State game, Doug. I'm sorry.
Is that the last sharp play you have?
Yeah, so far. That's really all I've seen this week. A little bit quiet this week. Maybe they're out spending all the money they won last week. Enjoying themselves.
Speaking of games not on TV, I want to talk about the Dodgers and the World Series because you guys get to finally watch a Dodger game now that they are in the playoffs. So that's a good thing.
Yes, it is nice to actually be able to watch the L.A. Dodgers. They're always blacked out here in Las Vegas, unfortunately.
Yeah, Vegas is no stranger to blackouts, but it's usually at the clubs and establishments. The fact that it's a TV blackout in 2018 is pretty ridiculous, given it's not just the Dodgers, it's a lot of West Coast teams. And we'll talk more about the Dodgers and the World Series straight ahead. Also, the first week of the NBA season, a lot of interesting topics there. All that coming up next. But first, a word from one of our sponsors. These days, you can get practically everything on demand, like our podcast. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. Did you know you can even get postage on demand? All you need is Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the services of the post office right from your desk. Buy and print real U.S. postage for any letter or any package. All available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you're done. Stamps.com will even send you a digital scale. You can weigh your letters and packages and print the exact amount of postage every time. Right now, use BETS, B-E-T-S, for this special offer. 4-week trial includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in BETS. That's Stamps.com. Enter BETS. Back with John Murray. Let's dive deeper into that World Series line now that you actually can show the games. So, Murray, it had all the makings of a pitcher's duel, but anyone who follows baseball knew that some team would score a lot, maybe both, because Chris Sale's velocity has been shaky. Kershaw's been shaky in the postseason throughout his career, and I say that as a Dodger fan, but definitely after the division series, he has struggled. And the cold weather, you just had the feeling this would not be that 3-2 game that we all wanted.
Yeah, and I like the Dodgers. They went with that 9-man lineup of all right-handers last night against Sale.
First time ever.
I thought that was kind of cool. And it's fun watching these two managers, you know, push the buttons. And Dave Roberts got a lot of heat for the pitching change right before that 3-run home run by Nunez, which pretty much ended the game last night. But I think this is going to be a long series. As good as Boston is, the Dodgers just have such a deep roster. I think they'll be able to push the Red Sox pretty deep in this series. We actually need the Red Sox now. We had a gentleman came in right when we opened up the series price on Saturday night after the Dodgers finished off Milwaukee. The guy bet $100,000 on the Dodgers at +115. Right when
that's
we opened
a stupid
up
bet. I thought the price of the series was low.
So he came in on Tuesday, Doug, and he bet $50,000 at +130. So this gentleman has a total of $150,000 on the Dodgers. And we need Boston. Now, I think I may have mentioned this earlier in the playoffs. We had a pretty liability on the American League because we had that American League versus National League prop.
Okay.
But with all this money that we've seen come in on LA since the World Series price has been posted, our overall need here at the book is now on the Red Sox.
Look, I'm a Dodgers fan. I'm actually going to Game 2 tonight. That's kind of why I wanted to push the taping of the pod up, because I want to get out there earlier before traffic and everything. I just don't see it. This team swings for the fences all the time, and their pitching is shaky at best. Mainly Kershaw's shaky, but even Buehler, as much as I love the guy, he's been shaky in the postseason. And the Red Sox are loaded. I mean, that's more what it is. The Red Sox are the better team. Now, does that mean they win? Definitely. Well, hopefully not for my sake. But the Red Sox, for some reason, aren't getting the respect by the odds makers. I mean, the Yankee series price was cheap. I think the Astros, I think it's fair that the Astros were favored. Don't get me wrong. But, like, this team is loaded, and the two-out hitting is case in point last night.
I think it's the starting pitching, Doug. I think outside of Sale, the Red Sox starting pitchers don't get a ton of respect.
And the bullpen.
But and the bullpen as well. You're absolutely right. But the patience of that lineup, they get all those two-out hits, like you just mentioned. They're a very patient lineup, and their defensive outfield is just phenomenal. With Bradley and Betts and Benintendi, I mean, all three of those guys are just outstanding defensive outfielders. How many runs did they save Boston in the Houston series?
Tons. And obviously it won the last game with Benintendi. I think it was Russillo who tweeted, they're the 2000 Ravens, that outfield.
That's a great comparison. I mean, those guys are awesome. And you know, Boston's pitching, not great. It's not terrible, but it's not great. But they've been saved so many runs by those three guys out there. And one of the most interesting things in the series is when it shifts to L.A., what are they going to do exactly? Because they got to have J.D. Martinez's bat in that lineup.
Well, they'll take Bradley out. They'll take Bradley out, put Mookie in center, and J.D. in right.
I think that's the most likely thing. I know there have been people saying they're going to move Mookie Betts to second base. I'll believe that when I see it. But, you know, taking Jackie Bradley Jr. out of that outfield is certainly a negative for them.
Right, and it was never really a huge thing because his offense was so bad for most of the regular season, but he's the ALCS MVP when he's hitting. You obviously want him in there. And for people who don't really appreciate defense, extra outs at this level is huge, obviously. But look at the first inning last night. David Freese gets lost in the pop-up. It lands foul. That runner gets on, and the Red Sox end up putting up a two spot, and then the Kershaw narrative is perpetuated. I'm not saying Kershaw is a disaster in the postseason, because he's not. That pop-up should have been an out, and who knows what happens. It's just, it's a combination of a lot of things. The Dodgers just aren't the better team. It's plain and simple, and in many facets. Maybe starting pitching and the newfound bullpen gets him over the hump, but I'm not going to say it's a must-win for the Dodgers tonight, but it's a pretty big game, and hopefully Price's postseason woes continue aside from his last outing, which was strong.
It's pretty close to a must-win, and I'll try to give you some hope here. Almost all the tickets are on Boston right now, DK. I mean, we're seeing pretty much all the bets we've seen on this game so far on the Red Sox, on the Red Sox run line. The book is going to need the Dodgers in game two, at least.
When they bet the favorites cover sometimes, so that's not as much of a warning sign as when they're all on the dog.
The public does occasionally like to back a favorite. That is definitely true.
All right, so you mentioned the liability with the Red Sox, and I thought the series price was a little on the cheaper side, and it's shot up now that the Red Sox won game one. So, all right, we'll table the baseball talk. Let's talk a little hoops. You mentioned the over-unders. You alluded to that. There's a lot of places to start. Let's start with the totals. Is it all power ratings, or are you guys juicing the power ratings once you get the total as well?
Well, these totals, you have to go up with them because every game is just so high scoring right now. So you're saying the totals are just much higher across the board. I just pulled up the NBA. I got it in front of me right now. We got 235.5, 230, 230.5, 237.5, 234.5. Those are just five of the games that are being played tonight, Doug.
The lowest one's 210.
The scoring in the NBA is just way up. And what was the score of that Lakers-Spurs game the other night? Like 148 to 145 or something? I mean, the game went to overtime, but still, it didn't go to quadruple overtime.
Right.
These NBA games are just so high scoring right now, it's crazy.
Yeah, you know, it's the pace, right? Like, these teams are chucking as well. I mean, look, the Bucks completely revolutionized their offense, wanting to go more three-pointers with Trae Young and the Hawks. They just want to get into a track meet. And it's almost like the Warriors are the ones being patient.
I think that more and more teams are understanding what the smarter teams have known for years about the values of the threes versus the twos. We talk about this all the time. Sports evolve, and these NBA teams are smarter than ever. Their strategies are better than ever, and it's translating to more and more scoring.
I agree, and I just It's also the freedom of movement sort of rules as well. Like, there's been a lot more ticky-tack calls. But, it's, I mean, look, at Blake Griffin dropped 50 points. He was money from three last night. It was an outstanding game. I watched the whole thing, given there wasn't a whole lot else on. But it is crazy to see how good these guys are. I mean, Stan Van Gundy was on Lebatard this morning talking about how the center's now pulled away on defense. And the whole thing is just it's interesting. It's just interesting to see the evolution. But one thing that's been a constant is the public backing the LeBron James teams. And here the Lakers are 0-3 against the number. You haven't – what's been the handle on these games?
Well, it's kind of what we expected. I mean, the public is coming in heavily on the Lakers. Now, I'll tell you this right now. If the Lakers keep losing, the public is going to stop backing them because there's nothing the public likes more than a winner. And, like, 2 years ago, we wrote tons of money on the Raiders every time they played because the Raiders were actually winning that year. Remember, they made the playoffs. They lost to Houston in the first round. The public has completely abandoned the Raiders this year, Doug. I can tell you that much. So as popular as the Lakers are, and Las Vegas is a Laker town, we both know that. But if this team keeps losing, man, the public is going to find somebody else to back.
Yeah, that's the difference between this Lakers team with Kobe, because they were perceived best team. The perceived best team, obviously, is the Warriors. And so they're not – I don't know, man. It's interesting. So I talked about it at the beginning of the season. I almost did a story on it, but the tax on the Lakers. So right now there isn't one. It's been straight power ratings, right? Because there's been value fading the Lakers right now.
Yeah, and even tonight's line, they're a 4.5-point favorite on the road in Phoenix. That number seems a little bit high to me, but as I sit here, of course, I pulled up the NBA board, and we have more tickets on guess which team than any other team in the NBA for tonight's action right now. The Lakers.
Yeah.
So the public hasn't abandoned them yet. I'm just saying if they continue to spiral and lose, the public will abandon them. But for now, they're still very happy to back the Lakers, and I do think some of their lines are a little high. They played some tough games to start the year, though. They played at Portland is a tough game, and then they played Houston on their home opener on Saturday night. It's not like they've been playing easy teams to start the season.
No, but they have major issues on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, it's a really bad team.
Yeah, LeBron looks a little – I'm scared to say it. It's only October 24th, but I think it needs to be said. He looks a little old.
Does he, or just out of shape?
I think, well, isn't that the same thing?
No.
I mean, he looks a little bit old, man. I mean, I think he took the summer off. I thought it was a little bit unfair to rip him for the end of that overtime, and I'll tell you why. He made that long three, otherwise they wouldn't have even gotten to overtime. But I do think he looks a little bit old right now, and that team is just kind of a mess right now. And I have a feeling that Luke Walton is going to be the
scapegoat.
The victim. The scapegoat is the word I was looking for. Thank you. I have a hunch that's what's going to happen. I don't think it's fair to Luke Walton, but as soon as they got LeBron, the pressure was on, man. They went from... Like, before they had LeBron, even being in the playoff hunt was a success for that team, right? Because they're rebuilding. But now that they have LeBron, they're on a whole different trajectory. And they're expected to win now.
I think it's a good spot to back the Lakers. I trust the line movement. Luke Walton complaining about the whistles in the last game. I think they get all the whistles tonight against the Suns. I don't know if they're going to cover the now the line's moved, but I agree with the line movement at least.
The market is definitely moving with the Lakers. We've seen it go from 2.5 to 4.5. So somebody out there that does have some respect is backing L.A., and so is everybody else.
All right, man. You guys took a big bet over the weekend, right? Against the Lakers in the playoffs?
You're talking about the Lakers bet? Now, that was last Monday. It was the day before the regular season started. We had one of our players come in. He bet the Lakers to make the playoffs minus 500. He laid 50,000 to win 10,000 on that one. Oof. So that was our... We got a pretty big decision on that now. I mean, he wasn't the only person that bet the Lakers to make the playoffs, believe me. And he was the biggest bet, of course, but we had other people also making that same wager. So certainly we would do well if the Lakers did not make it to the postseason.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens with this Lakers team if they don't cover, how much the backing of the public is going to change, if at all. So, Murray, we appreciate the perspective. We'll talk with you tomorrow in the NFL podcast.
All right, buddy. Have fun at Fenway Park tonight. I'm jealous, man. I'll be watching.
Thanks, man. I'm dedicated to the podcast. I didn't try to tape both today so I could stay in Boston or anything like that. I'm coming back. We'll be here on time.
I appreciate it. But for the World Series, I would have been happy to move my schedule around. That's a big deal. I've never been to a World Series game. If my Nationals ever make it, I will fork over the money to go.
Yeah, that's what I did Game 7 last year. It didn't work out so well.
Yeah.
All right, bud.
Hopefully it works out better for you tonight, man.
Thank you. We'll talk tomorrow. That does it for this edition of the Behind the Bets podcast. Thanks to John Murray and thanks to Phil Steele for their time, analysis, and input. Coming up tomorrow, Murray's going to rejoin us. We'll break down the NFL card and the oh-so-interesting decisions by the Giants on Monday Night Football. Kai, how you feeling about those Giants?
In a word, disgusted, man. That two-point conversion. I know you are the numbers guy, and you understand the analytics.
So I'm a common-sense guy, first of all. Don't peg me. I'm a common-sense guy.
You are fair. No disrespect there. You are the common-sense guy, but I know that you understand the analytics that go into some of the decision-making.
Right.
And I just, for the life of me, can't understand two things. One, which is near and dear to me, why the Giants went for two and didn't just settle for the extra point and then give their defense confidence to stop and go again. And why the Dodgers took out Baez after two straight.
Yeah, I'm disappointed with Baez. Murray alluded to it earlier, especially when he's got an opponent's left-handed pitchers are batting less than 200 against him. So the righty, but whatever. It is what it is. I can't lose too much sleep over it. And for the Giants, like, that's not the reason they lost. You realize that, right?
Oh, no, absolutely. I know that's not the reason
they lost. And the real reason they lost, or one of the major reasons, a bigger story, was how they botched the clock at the end of the first half on offense.
Right.
Like, that was the issue. And we'll talk all about that. Murray and I are going to get fired up. I can't wait. And we'll have a good time with that. But really, like, the Giants being all over our airwaves. And, I mean, they have one win. Why do we talk about them as much as we do? It's really...
I'm a Giants fan, and I'm sick of watching them.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I do have one going out really quick.
Yeah.
About, you know, just for Confessions of a Non-Gambler.
Oh, yeah. Confessions of a Non-Gambler. We forgot. I apologize.
I just want to know if we could just give a quick explanation on futures. Now, to my understanding from following the conversation, it's... betting the outcome of a season before the season starts. But I'm hearing that you could also do that within the season. How exactly does that work? And is it better to do it before the season starts?
So futures don't have a definitive start time. Futures are all about, like, long-term, right? So you can bet a future. Let's say it's the first round of the playoffs and you want to bet on the World Series, like 4-1 on the Brewers or something. That's a futures ticket, even though it's only like a few weeks away. It doesn't mandate that the season has not started per se. You can do a bunch of futures. I believe season prop bets are considered futures as well. I'm not 100% sure, but like the yes or no on the Lakers to make the playoffs that Murray referenced earlier, that they took a big bet at -550K to win 10. I think that's considered a futures as well. The only concern I have is usually the futures market is one-way betting, and the yes-no is a two-way bet. It's exactly as it sounds. Two ways. There's two ways to bet, yes or no. Whereas the futures, the conventional futures, are one-way betting, meaning you can only bet the Lakers at 4-1 to win the NBA title. You can't bet them at 1-4, which we would all love to do.
Gotcha.
Like the Warriors are -200 to make the play. Excuse me, to win it all. You some places will have a yes-no prop, which is two-way betting, but for the most part, futures are one-way betting, which is like who's going to win the Heisman. So even though the season has started, you can still bet on the futures market of who's going to win the Heisman. The key is those change, right? So a couple years ago, Lamar Jackson was 100-1 to win the Heisman at the beginning of the season, and he had that monster performance against Florida State. I believe it was in September. It was early in the season. And then he had some other impressive numbers. And so the futures market continued to change, but there were still a futures tickets you could buy. Like Tua this week, Tua is -500 at some places to win the Heisman Trophy. He was a favorite at plus money at the beginning of the season, so it's still down the road. It's in the future, hence the name, but it doesn't mean those go off the board once the season starts.
Gotcha.
It's about when the bet is cash, not when the bet is started, so to speak.
So it's really in the name. It just has to be in the future.
Yeah, I'm assuming that. And the yes-no prop bets, maybe we'll ask Murray on air tomorrow on the podcast, but that's a good question there, Kai. So things change. The playoff odds change, all that stuff. What? Any other confessions of a non-gambler?
Not on this show. It's just, you know, I can't wait to talk more about the Giants botch.
We'll talk all about the Giants. But trust me, going for two was not their issue. They had a lot of other issues.
Yeah, we have a lot of issues today that probably started before the season.
Right. All right, my man. Good. So thanks to everyone for downloading, and we'll catch you back here. I am off to Boston, hopefully, for a Dodgers win.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.